This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Tuesday, 21st May, 1901. The House of Representatives. Mr. Speaker announced he had received a commission from the Governor-General to administer the oath to members. George Houston Reed and Hugh Mahon took the oath of allegiance. Edmund Barton, the Protectionist Minister for External Affairs representing Hunter, withdrew the draft standing orders laid on the table on May 10th and replaced them with a revised draft. George Reed interjected, remarking that a revised draft would save trouble. Barton then moved that the revised document be printed. Mr. Speaker explained that after examining the building, he found member accommodation limited. He allocated the large room on the second floor to ministerial supporters, the next room to the Labour Party, and the large room on the first floor to the opposition. He also announced that doorkeepers would be on duty, requested members provide their Melbourne addresses, and noted a petition against a member's return, which would be referred to the appropriate committee due to the lack of standing orders. Barton then read a cablegram from J.P. Booth, Speaker of the Legislative Assembly of British Columbia, congratulating the Commonwealth Parliament, to which Barton replied with thanks. The House then resumed consideration of the address in reply to the Governor-General's speech from May 10th. William Groom, a protectionist member for Darling Downs, moved that the address be agreed to. He congratulated Mr. Speaker and Mr. Reed on their return to health. Groom stressed the importance of the High Court and the Interstate Commission, suggesting the latter should have five commissioners drawn, preferably from Australia's railway departments. He highlighted to Queensland the necessity of restricting Asiatic immigration and abolishing South Sea Islands labour, lamenting interference in previous Kanaka labour legislation. Groom referenced the Sugar Works Guarantee Act, noting the Queensland government's investment of approximately £650,000 in the sugar industry against £7 or £8 million by private enterprise. He also mentioned Mr. Chamberlain's address at a conference in London. Groom expressed that old age pensions should be considered, with recipients contributing to them, and invoked Prince Bismarck's scheme. He lamented the absence of Sir Henry Parkes and Mr. James Service, and cited an unwritten law in the British Constitution that public men are generally not in a position to acquire wealth. Declaring himself a moderate protectionist, he referenced Richard Cobden's comment after the repeal of the Corn Laws and stated that the government should take note currency under its control. Throughout, interjections by Sidney Smith and Joseph Cook sought clarifications, particularly on appointments made on provincial grounds. Richard Crouch from Corio seconded the motion. He supported the ministry for its democratic election methods and the Prime Minister's leadership. Although he acknowledged that the ministry was not a ministry of all the talents, he noted that it practically represented all the premiers. He commended the government's plan for a uniform franchise and electoral law, including adult suffrage and the abolition of ratepayer rolls. He criticised Victoria's voting system and remarked on the need for Australia to have control over its military forces. In a jocular remark by Barton, he warned that if the House continued taxing in such a way, they must have a voice in policy, quoting Tennyson before further interjections arose regarding the Emperor and the Monroe Doctrine. Mr. Reed proposed adjourning until after dinner. Although Barton felt it was premature, the motion to adjourn was agreed to. After dinner, George Reed of East Sydney, New South Wales, spoke. He congratulated the government on having faithful and vigilant representatives and anticipated benefits from the interchange of feelings and convictions, rejoicing in the attainment of Australian brotherhood. However, he criticised the formation of the ministry for its lack of representation from every state, including Tasmania, and decried what he called a virtual dictatorship in state affairs. Analysing election results, Mr. Reed argued for a genuine revenue tariff that would not take money from the pockets of the Australian taxpayer. He stressed that fiscal policy must primarily ensure that workers are busy, happy, and prosperous. Quoting a paragraph on the fiscal question, He argued that policies which restrain natural industries end up stifling them, citing that where fiscal policy is sound, the state's hand remains the lightest. He congratulated the government for beginning to address the issues of the laboring classes and announced that bills would soon be introduced to reform immigration laws and abolish Kanaka labor. Interjections followed from members, including Mr. Joseph Cook, who critiqued free traders and protectionists, prompting Mr. Reid to reiterate his support for a fiscal policy that prioritizes revenue and a balanced tariff system. Barton then rose to defend his government's policies, insisting that what was communicated to the people differed from discussions held at Maitland. Interjection by Sidney Smith accused the speech of contradicting the government's manifesto and warned against chasing mistakes. Mr. Speaker reminded members of the British House of Commons rules regarding interjections, and Sidney Smith apologised. Barton explained that no permanent appointments were made, and that the government planned to assess positions further once the current address in reply was disposed of. He concluded by suggesting that the House now adjourn. Joseph Cook moved that the House, at its rising, adjourn until 2:30 tomorrow. George Reid interjected, arguing that standing orders should be addressed immediately, but Barton stated that these would be considered after the address in reply. The Senate. The Senate began by reading a petition and addressing several preliminary matters. Senator Edward Millen asked whether the government was finalising an agreement with the Victorian state government regarding the renting of premises, and whether the House would be informed of the agreement's contents before its completion. Senator Richard O'Connor, a protectionist from New South Wales and Vice President of the Executive Council, requested that Senator Millen give proper notice of his question, a point which Senator John Neild confirmed had already been observed. Senator Anderson Dawson from the Australian Labour Party asked if the government would ensure that parliamentary papers were available each morning after sittings to avoid previous embarrassments due to their absence. Senator O'Connor responded that instructions had been given to deliver minutes and notices by 10:00, though Senator Dawson pointed out they had not received their papers. The President then reported receiving a commission from the Governor-General to administer the oath to members, which the clerk subsequently read. Senator Millen suggested that, in addition to taking the oath, senators should sign a roll, as is customary in many parliaments. The President explained that signing a roll was covered by the standing orders, which had not yet been formally adopted. Senator O'Connor moved to postpone several notices of motion so that the address in reply could be the sole focus of business the following day. After debate, citing parliamentary practice from the Imperial Parliament and statements from Senator John Neild, Senator Josiah Simon, Senator Dawson, and Senator Sir John Downer, the motion was passed. Senator Simon Fraser from Victoria then informed the Senate that the committee preparing the address in reply had received a letter from the Governor-General. The clerk read the address in reply, and Senator Fraser moved for its adoption. He endorsed the address's references to the Duke of Cornwall and York and the late Queen Victoria, proposed that many of its matters be debated when corresponding bills were before the Senate, and stressed defence priorities. In his remarks on defence, he expressed hope that the appointed commander would be current in strategy, supported citizen soldiery and rifle clubs, and argued that naval defence, supported by forts and mines, should be the primary focus given Australia's isolation. He noted Cuba's fall due to a naval blockade as an example, stating that the public could not afford an extravagant system. Senator Fraser turned next to economic issues. He warned of the growing strength of foreign shipping, particularly from the North German Lloyd Steamship Company, and explained that ships in Germany, France, and Japan were heavily subsidized. Reflecting on this, he proposed charging higher dues on foreign ships, a suggestion that led to interjections by Senator Thomas Glassy. The remedy is in our own hands. Senator Thomas Playford calling it retaliation, and Senator Josiah Simon describing it as benevolence. Addressing revenue, Senator Fraser acknowledged that the Customs and Excise Bill required at least £8,500,000 in revenue. He explained that New South Wales woods would generate a surplus under a Commonwealth tariff, but that additional revenue from overseas goods was necessary. When Senator Miles Smith suggested direct taxation, Fraser responded that direct taxation was already heavy and cautioned that state treasurers would be forced into it unless sufficient federal revenue was raised. Turning to domestic industry, Senator Fraser highlighted the success of Victoria's butter industry, which had been sustained even during an economic crisis. Despite interjections regarding cost and quality from Senator Dawson, Fraser maintained that Victorians accepted slightly higher prices for better butter and good jam, and invited senators to visit butter-producing regions. He also discussed Victoria's coal production, noting that Gippsland now produced 250,000 tonnes per annum, despite earlier scepticism. Senator Fraser also proposed a bonus of £5,000 for the first 500 reapers and binders made in Australia, prompting concerns from Senator Millen, Senator Playford, and others about market flooding and pricing. In related discussions, Senator Fraser advocated for reform of postal and telegraphic services by dividing the Commonwealth into districts, following the example of Canada, and suggested telegraph fees be charged based on mileage. He emphasized that even with large potential savings on loans, the current system of fees paid to British banks should be replaced by localized borrowing with improved exchange rates. He further proposed reducing the number of judges, a notion that elicited questions about workload distribution from Senator Millen and Senator Gould. On immigration, Senator Fraser reaffirmed his long-standing position in favour of a white Australia. He stressed that restricting Asiatic immigration was crucial, adding that if the sugar industry, vital to drought-stricken Queensland, could not operate with white labour, then the importation of Kanaka labour should cease immediately. This view was supported during detailed debate. Senator Gould, for example, emphasised that if a protected industry like sugar could not be conducted with white labour, then the Kanaka ought to go, and he called for a diverse commission to study the issue. Senator John Keating from Tasmania seconded a motion supporting compulsory referral to boards of conciliation and arbitration, highlighting the merits of a national system of old-age pensions. He noted that 50% of Tasmania's revenue came from customs and excise, and called for improved rail connections to link eastern communities, Western Australia, and the Northern Territory. Senator Albert Gould from New South Wales clarified that he had withdrawn his name from the committee preparing the address in reply to maintain its non-partisan character. He reiterated his support for a white Australia and, when pressed on the issue, stated that only in exceptional circumstances and under stringent regulations would he consent to any measure that might be seen as a danger to a white Australia. He also spoke about industrial policies, comparing the experiences of states under protectionism and free trade. In a notable remark, he said, "We were told today about the commerce of Germany and of France, and we were also told that the whole of it had been built up by draining money out of the pockets of the taxpayers of the country." He argued that tariffs and protective measures should secure a fair return of surplus revenue for each state without destroying employment. Senator John Neild from New South Wales criticised the Premier's speech for lacking the positive assurance that had been characteristic of earlier statements, stating that it undermined the authority of the Senate. Senator Richard O'Connor dismissed this view as ludicrous. Meanwhile, Senator Edward Millen argued against extending government influence over appointments to the federal public service, insisting that selections should be made from within the existing public service rather than by recruiting externally. He also questioned a proposal whereby members of the Victorian State Parliament would use certain rooms in the building, deeming it inconvenient. On federal electoral law, Senator Millen enforced the need to prioritise revenue first and maintain protective duties, citing Victoria's successful butter industry as evidence. Senator Norman Ewing from Western Australia spoke on Australia's debts to Great Britain, stressing that many current benefits were gifts from the motherland and expressing hope that government measures would not diminish the Privy Council's role as the final court of appeal. Despite interjections concerning the practicality of using the Privy Council for Australians, Senator Ewing held that uniformity of law throughout the British-speaking countries was essential. After extensive debate on revenue, protection, industrial policy, and immigration, Senator Richard O'Connor moved to adjourn the debate. He then proposed adjourning the House, a motion that was seconded and accepted. Although Senator Dawson requested arrangements to provide proof sheets of the debates each morning, as done in Queensland, Senator O'Connor noted that current staffing and expense constraints made that impossible. The Senate adjourned until the following day. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au